Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
They say that tougher gun laws do not decrease gun violence. We call BS!
Welcome to the New Yorker Radio Hour. I'm David Remnick. In the weeks since the shooting in Parkland, Florida, the push for gun control in this country has gained momentum at an astonishing pace. Students from Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School pressured Florida lawmakers into passing the first significant gun regulation bill that state has seen in decades. And seemingly overnight, they threw together a national movement known as Never Again, which recently gathered hundreds of thousands of protesters across the country in the event billed as March for Our Lives.
6 minutes and about 20 seconds. In a little over 6 minutes, 17 of our friends were taken from us, 15 were injured, and everyone, absolutely everyone, in the Douglas community was forever altered. Everyone who was there understands.
Emma Gonzalez, a survivor of the Parkland attack, very quickly became one of the most visible leaders of the new movement. She's instantly recognizable. When we see her in public, she's got her army green jacket covered in patches. Her head is shaved. Her voice is stalwart. And she is absolutely fierce. In the last 2 months, Gonzalez has debated an NRA spokesman on live TV and faced down a wave of trolling attacks from extremists. One video that went viral compared her activism to the Hitler Youth, all of which is a lot to bear for a high school senior who wasn't old enough to vote in the last election. Emma, I barely know where to begin, but what I'd like to know is what your life was like the day before the shootings. What were your days filled with? What were you dreaming of? What did you worry about?
Yeah. So before this all happened, my main concerns were, how can I, like, my shirt doesn't really fit. How can I tailor this better? You know, like, I was very into clothing modifications. I have this old hoodie that my brother had. It was like, it was an extra large. It was too big for all of the people in the family to wear. So I cut it in half, and then I cut other little strips into it, and I re-sewed the strips so it looks all like kind of punk, but not really. It looks cool. And I embroidered a lot of patches onto my patch jacket, which I actually wore at the march because I figured, you know, it's iconic. So, like, mainly watching Netflix was a big concern.
What do you watch on Netflix?
Oh, what don't I watch on Netflix? I watch a lot of movies. We're a big movie family. We had a whole summer where it was like, now Emma's old enough to watch all the movies that were previously inappropriate. Let's show her everything that now she's old enough to watch. And it was like, it was the summer of Young Frankenstein. It was the summer of Death to Smoochie. It was a good time, you know?
Tell me a little bit about your family.
My family, I have two older brothers, I have two parents. My dad is Cuban, my mom is from Virginia. Mm-hmm. I got my older brothers, one of them is living in New York, he's fully grown. Another is in college ahead of me, and I'm going into college, and I'm very excited about that. We're a very loosey-goosey type of family. Like, our main conversations are just movie quotes.
You know, when people see you behind a microphone or at a demonstration, they look at you and they think this person must have been a very political person, as even as a kid, you know, as a teenager. Was that the case?
I would like to think that it was, because especially after the last election, I mean, I was always like understandable of how the way the world works, because in ninth grade, that was when I fully came out. So, like, I was very aware of all of the things that could possibly go wrong for someone who is of the LGBT plus community.
Sure. As a political issue, did guns come up among your friends before the shootings?
They did a little bit. We had conversations in class about guns. Like, when the Las Vegas shooting happened, we were talking about it in class for, I think, like the whole period. Watching the Las Vegas shooting happen was horrible. that never should have happened. It was definitely something that all of us were like, this is a huge problem. Like, bump stocks are terrible. Why don't they ban them? And then, like, you know, everybody was talking about banning bump stocks, but then they never did. And
Emma, this is a difficult question, I'm sure, but tell me about the way your day began on February 14th. Tell me where you were and when you either heard or saw the first signs of trouble at school.
That was a silver day for me. We have silver days and burgundy days because those are our school colors. And on silver days, I have astronomy, then I have study hall, then I have AP Gov, and then I have English. But during the day, during both lunches, I was doing something for GSA, Gay Straight Alliance. It was a table in the middle of the courtyard where everybody eats lunch. We were handing out proclamations of love. Because, you know, they're basically like little free Valentine's Day cards that you can give to people. But it looks like an official piece of paper that's like, I proclaim my love to thee, ha ha. And it was a really cute thing. And it was just a way to like spread the love. And some people were like, oh, cool, I love this. I'm going to give this to the person I hate the most and who hates me the most. And I'm like, oh, frenemies. You know, like I didn't really care who took it so long as people were spreading the love. And you could use them if you wanted to, like, propose to someone and fake marry them. Like, it was all good fun and in the name of love. And it was actually kind of funny because later we visited the school on the Sunday after because we had to regroup. And someone came up to me and said, hey, Emma, I just wanted you to know that proclamation of love was the last time I got to say I love you to my friend before she died. So, wow. So I just want to tell you thank you for giving us that opportunity. And I was thinking about that the day of. I was like, how many people did we sign off those proclamations to, and they were able to give them to their friends before they died? And someone actually came up to me and told me that, and that was wild. But after we finished up the table, I had been sitting out in the sun for about 3 hours straight. So we went to the auditorium, and my teacher printed off an attendance sheet to make sure none of us left the auditorium, because, you know, sometimes we would be able to sneak off and stuff, but this time, for some reason, she doesn't even know why to this day, she just was consumed with the thought, like, perfect, I'll print off an attendance sheet, nobody will be able to ditch the class. And my friend and I were actually going to leave and go to one of our favorite teachers who was on the third floor of the freshman building, and that was one of the classes that got hit pretty hard. And if my teacher hadn't printed off the attendance sheet, we would have been there, which is something to think about.
Emma, it's pretty known that when people in the world lose somebody, they lose friends, they lose relatives, the first period right after, the immediate mourning period, there's a lot to do. There's a lot of commotion. There's friends come over with food. There's the funeral to arrange. There's this, that, and the other thing. That it really sinks in, either the loneliness or the sense of loss comes a bit later. A bit later has now come. We're now in springtime, and this happened in mid-February. I wonder how you and your friends are processing and experiencing the losses that you did now as opposed to 6 weeks ago.
I mean, I don't speak for everybody else in the movement, but I know for a fact that, like, usually nowadays, just the thought of Carmen is enough to overwhelm me.
Tell me about Carmen.
Carmen Shentrup was, she was in the freshman building, and she was killed on that day. And we were good friends. We were on the bus together. We were even on the bus sometimes the same day as the shooter. I knew his bus stop, and hers was, like, right before his. So, feels weird to think about that. And it's not, you know, like, there's always the mix of, oh, it's good to remember those things that are a part of that person's life, but it's also sad to remember that they're not going to continue being that person, that their picture is never going to actually age. It's going to be that picture for the rest of your life, not theirs. But aside from that, it's just mainly, like, we know that we're pushing for these changes for these people. Us personally, as a part of March for Our Lives, we are connected to the people who are lost in our hometown, so we are fighting for them, first and foremost. We are also fighting for those who are lost every day due to this. We have friends now that we know their whole lives have been turned upside down by gun violence. We're fighting for everyone who's been affected by this, but, you know, we all have those, we all have our own reasons for fighting these battles, and very selfishly, a lot of us in the movement, we pull them first and foremost in our own minds.
Your mother said something amazing about you. She said, this is your mother, Beth. It's like she built herself a pair of wings out of balsa wood and duct tape and jumped off a building, and we're just like running along beneath her with a net, which she doesn't want or think that she needs.
Mm-hmm.
What do you make of that?
I remember that line. I think that that is kind of true, although I'd like to think, you know, as a mother, she's a little bit more worried about my precarious position than I am, because as a brazen, naive adult, young adult, I'd like to think, I don't have to wear shoes when I'm walking on a paved road. There's no glass here. Stomp, stomp. But, you know, like, I'm very assured in where I am in my life, and I know what is and what isn't from what I've seen, but there are many people who know more about what I don't know because they've seen a lot more and they're older and wiser.
Now, you are right in the center of, and you and your friends are right in the center of a political argument that is, on the one hand, incredibly moving and has moved a lot of people to the streets and into some form of political action or another, but you've had a big taste of how immovable most politicians are, particularly in the Republican Party, but not only, when it comes to guns. What are your real hopes and expectations, and what are your frustrations now that you're encountering real-life politicians in a political battle?
Honestly, encountering those politicians that are very stubborn when it comes to what their beliefs are, what their voting issues are, if they don't reflect what the majority of their constituents are calling for, just makes them that much easier to vote out of office. It's kind of refreshing to see someone who really won't move, because then you can say, well, their opponent will probably move, and then you talk to their opponent and it turns out they will move, and now you know who to vote for or something like that.
But you live in the state of Florida. Are you pretty confident mm-hmm. that on the basis of this issue, somebody like Marco Rubio is going to get voted out?
Yeah, no, we're going to very hopefully vote him out the next presidential election, because he's a disaster. He never listens to anybody. We have a game in my house called Marco Rubio instead of Marco Polo, because, you know, you can't find him because he's never in office. You call him and he's not there. And then you go to his office and he's not there. And you send him a letter and he never answers back. He's just one. That's exactly what should not happen. And the fact that it's a disaster.
Now, you've been attacked in the media and by the NRA pretty hard. And there have been fake photos mm-hmm. of you that have been distributed online. One of them has you, I think, tearing up either the Constitution or the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah, they whitewashed me in that one.
Yeah.
It's funny.
So what's your favorite attack, but how does it overall make you feel?
I don't really know if I have a favorite one. They're all so weak. Like, you know, there's, as far as I know, for me personally, there's been the crisis actor attack that, like, I'm a child actress who shaved her head. But the Constitution one is really funny. Because, like, I don't know, like, they whitewashed me, and they gave me, like, they made my eyes, like, the skin around my eyes look really dark as though I was really tired. Like, that was just funny. And, like, I don't know, they're really weak attacks. I don't think I could actually have a favorite, because, like, there'd actually have to be a good one, but they're all really weak.
Emma, I think the march in Washington and the marches that occurred all over the country were among the most moving and important political events in this country in a long time. And then the next day comes. How does the movement mm-hmm. get sustained when inevitably, your classmates are going to begin to separate? Some people are going to get more interested in other things. Political movements are very, very hard to sustain, especially when they're flying in the face of really, really strong opposition. Mm-hmm. How does this go forward?
Well, in terms of people getting pulled apart, I don't really know if that's going to happen here because a tragedy brought us together. And, you know, what happened in Parkland was the beginning of getting everybody to listen. And the march was the beginning of the storytelling. And now we're going around and everybody's going to be directly confronting the people who have the direct say in this. And that would be the representatives. We're going to be doing letter writing campaigns, like Letters for Our Lives, and, you know, town halls. We're going to be giving interviews. We're going to be not just us, but the people involved, like people all around the country. Like, I love the kids that we met from Chicago. They're some of the most wonderful people, and we're going to be like lifelong friends, I can tell. It's just they deal with a completely different type of violence, almost. You know, they lose 17 people on a good week. It's so important that we get these people's voices heard because they're the people who we should be fighting for the most because they deal with it the most. People wonder how, you know, like they're like, you guys are the generation that has the shortest attention span or whatever. And it's like, well, yeah, but we also know how to keep people's attention on us because we're teenagers and we have the phones.
You have the phones. Mm-hmm. Emma, thank you so much. I thank you for a lot more than just this interview, you and your friends.
Thank you so much.
Emma Gonzalez is a senior at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School.